Over the last couple of Sundays, as Eleanor shared, we've been exploring our series, Sinners and Saints. And we've talked about how we're all capable, we are all capable of hurting each other. That we are all both sinner and saint, all of the time. And how this shared reality calls us to return to trust and to the promise of relationship, even after we've been hurt. But today, I finally get to tell you that at the end of both of the services that we've had so far, I keep thinking, I wish I could yell out a P.S. Like, I know, it's not that simple. Because while these are important principles, of course, the journey from betrayal to restored trust, like the work that it takes to make repair a reality in the regular, everyday breaks that happen in relationship, let alone those larger experiences of trauma or loss in our lives. The work of getting over pain is often incredibly hard. And it's the work of our whole lives. We don't just decide to keep trusting, to keep promising. I have a little story from this summer that I think illustrates this a little. This summer, I confess, I was playing football with my son in bare feet. Don't worry, I learned my lesson. Because as I was playing with him and his friends in the grass, I cut my foot open. So badly, I needed 4 stitches. I mean, it takes a lot to need 4 stitches on your foot, so it was meaningful. And the cut hurt, that's true, but actually, the putting in of the stitches, I don't know if you've had stitches recently, but it's very painful. These things that were meant to help me hurt even worse than the wound itself. And then as the skin began to reconnect itself over the next couple of weeks, as the healing happened, that hurt too. And then because of where the cut happened, the stitches, of course, could not be the dissolvable kind, you know, the ones that they don't have to take out again later. These stitches were so important to my healing. But then the time came where actually they started to be an obstacle to my healing, which happens, actually, with healing, where the thing that helps for a while starts to instead get in the way. So to keep healing, my stitches had to come out. And removing the stitches, oh my gosh, that hurt the worst of all. This is the truth about healing, I think, that physical healing or emotional healing or spiritual healing, all healing hurts. And it's hard. We don't talk about this enough, but it's true. The work that we do to recover after we have been hurt hurts. We think of healing, I think, we hear the word healing, and we think of herbal tea and massages, long walks and deep breaths, like, yes, let's heal. Right? And it's true, there are parts of healing that can feel good. I mean, I love the cool antibiotic gel I put on my wound each night. That felt good. But just as often, the experience of healing approximates more the experience of harm than the relief of harm. It's why we often do all we can to avoid healing, avoid recovery. I mean, I think of the times in my life where I've delayed calling a therapist, even though I know it could help. Because going to therapy is hard, and it can hurt. But I do love having my toes working again. I do love being able to play with my son with shoes without worrying about breaking open the skin again, and even more than I did before I was injured, right? Because I know now what it means to not have fully working toes. And so being healed is even better than I was before I was injured at all. it's glorious, really. While doing the work of healing may hurt, being healed is glorious. So it's important that we try to understand what this work really takes, what recovery takes. To help with that, I want to share a story about a pretty extreme situation of humans hurting each other. When I first heard it, I thought, okay, if healing is possible here, if they can move through the work of healing, get to this experience of being healed, then there's hope for all of us all the time. Maybe you know in the 1990s, the West African nation of Sierra Leone experienced a brutal, bitter conflict. I had to think hard about which stories to share with you because the stories are all horrific. Just as an example, the rebel armies forced civilians to perpetrate acts on their behalf against their friends, their family members, their neighbors. And children as young as 7 were forced into the armies, given machine guns and machetes. Over a decade, these horrible acts added up to an extensive and bone-chilling list of war crimes. Over 50,000 people were killed, and many more than that were severely injured. But in 2002, finally, things came together, and the war was declared ended. But then what? Right? All the people who were left, they had to figure out, like, what next? They hadn't died, they were still alive, and yet what would that life mean? After all the pain that they had experienced over more than a decade, more than just the pain they had experienced, the pain they had in many cases caused, how could they go on and weave together all their shattered pieces into something that they could call again? Something they might call regular life. It was especially hard to imagine because in many cases, the people who had been forced to injure them or kill someone that they loved was their friend. They're like literally living next door to them on either side. Or was their teacher or their healer in the village. There was no way to just avoid the one who had harmed you. Harm was everywhere. They believed and longed for that glorious experience of being healed, but how? As has been customary, they started by establishing a Truth and Reconciliation Committee, which recorded the stories of what had happened during the war. And there were trials for many of those in leadership. But these official formal processes never quite met the ordinary people that were really impacted by this violence, especially in those more remote villages, the people who had been forced to turn on their neighbors. The official commission was more like the political equivalent of chamomile tea and bubble baths. Right? They were really important signs signaling good intent, but they couldn't actually touch the real wound that needed healing. This disconnect is what led the national chair of the committee, a man named John Cocker, to go looking for alternatives. Eventually, he worked with a team to establish a new model using traditional Creole ceremonies. And then he brought these ceremonies back to the people in the villages. Generally, the way it works is the ceremonies begin with a bonfire. A big, traditional, truth-telling bonfire where both victims and perpetrators have the chance around the bonfire to come forward for the first time and tell their stories. Every path of recovery has to begin here by coming forward and telling the truth. Recovery starts by being honest, starting most of all with ourselves. This is actually harder than we might think because we often try to minimize the pain that we've experienced, try not to think about, and actually for a while, this can be a good thing, right? It can be a way to give ourselves the time and the space that we need to deal with what has happened. But as with my stitches, after a while, the thing that had helped instead starts to get in the way. And so recovery means letting loose and setting down whatever barriers we have put between us and the truth. Letting go of all the things that we do to prevent ourselves from contending with reality. The distractions, the diversions, set these aside and get honest. To let ourselves feel the ways that we have been hurt, and to get really specific with ourselves about what we've experienced, what hurt us, who, and why it hurt. So many things can help with this, I've found. Just simply spending time in nature, sitting in silence, music, taking time to just be. For me, it's often taking my dog Charlie on a long, long walk and checking in on the ducks and the river. But whatever it is, something that will help release us from the story that we've built up around that experience of hurt, and instead just release us back into the actual experience, including our part in it. To get honest in a way that doesn't understate the harm, but also doesn't overstate it either. Our bodies can help us in this work. When you talk to people about what helps them recover, my guess is earlier when y'all were talking, often people will say moving your body, right? Hiking or dancing, running, yoga, something that releases the wisdom that's stored in our bodies, knowledge that we have, as our bodies don't often consult with the storytelling parts of our brains. So any regular movement helps us tap into the truth that's stored in our muscles, in our bones, in our breath, brings it further to consciousness. Once we have come to this honesty, then the next step in recovery after that requires being heard in this honesty. In the truth-telling bonfires of Sierra Leone, this starts with the person who was injured. The person who was harmed tells what happens to them, the impact that it had, for everyone in the whole community to hear it, including the one who caused the injury. To be heard by the one who hurt you can be so powerful. Right, to have the chance to say, this was the impact that your actions had on my life. This was my experience. I mean, it can be vulnerable too. Scary, really. But powerful to open yourself up like that, to release. And I'm not sure any relationship of real depth or length can survive without a willingness to brave this truth-telling space together. In the village ceremony, after the perpetrator hears the story from the one that they injured, then in turn they come forward and acknowledge the pain and the truth that has been shared. Without minimizing, without explanation, they acknowledge and they receive. And then they say out loud what they did, and then they apologize authentically, because it's a pain that they carry too, something that they need to set down too. They need to be heard too. Importantly, in these ceremonies, there's been no threat of any kind of punishment after this process, which allows that the person who hurt you feels more free to be more honest, more willing to hear the pain that they've caused. Now, of course, this direct sharing isn't always possible, right? The person who hurt you may be unwilling or unable or unsafe to actually share with for all kinds of reasons, including that they may have died. Now, sometimes we get stuck when we realize this, that the one who hurt us won't ever really be able to hear us. But still, and this can be a big loss to realize. And it's important to acknowledge our grief when this happens. But still, it's important also not to let this get caught in believing that you can't recover. Recovery requires being heard, but not necessarily by the one who injured you. To let go of the pain someone has caused actually doesn't even require an apology. I mean, it helps, but it isn't required. Because the letting go, the setting down of the stones, as with our reading or in our ritual, this thing we often call forgiveness, it isn't for the one who did the hurting. It's the other one who needs it. Just finding a way to say out loud to someone, anyone, who has the openness, the readiness to hear helps. Just being heard and being seen for the impact, the experience, to hear yourself and see yourself in the pain. And to offer yourself compassion. This is what helps us recover. In Sierra Leone, it was also important that this truth-telling happen in community because the harm had been collective. I think we underestimate how often this is true. We tend to over-personalize injury and then under-recognize how often our actions have communal impact. And I just think about some friends who've gone through bitter breakups, you know, which often has ripple effects across a friendship circle. In a couple of instances, I've actually had a chance later, after some time has passed, after the pain, to hear them tell each other the truth and to apologize and then to forgive each other. It's like breathing new air when that's happened, a new possibility that it isn't just about the couple, but it again has a healing effect across the whole circle, the family, the community. It's true more often than we think, and definitely more often than we practice, how often it would be helpful to hold and then heal the pain that we've experienced as a whole community. Not only does it help us hear each other, but it also reminds us that others have suffered and others have survived, and that something new is possible. Researcher Owendrilla Dubé says that this process has been extraordinarily healing for the whole community in Sierra Leone. They started this new process in about 2008, so it's been a little over a decade since they began. And since then, they report they don't just feel differently, they behave differently as well. There are more friendships. They rely on each other more for help. They contribute more to their communities. They spend more time and resources building schools and health clinics. They've really changed the community orientation of their behavior. Over the last 10 years, across many of the smallest villages, these ceremonies have laid a path for the communities to follow on an ongoing journey of recovery as they return from the trauma, the death, back to life. And still, for all the ways that these processes have helped them, I have to tell you that at least when it comes to their psychological health, so far, people who've participated have actually reported that they are now experiencing more anxiety and more depression since they had before the ceremonies. Because what they forgot is that healing hurts, right? So they did these one-time ceremonies thinking it would be all better, not thinking about the fact that it would bring up all those traumatic memories closer to the surface in a really short time frame. So what they're realizing now is that the villages need ongoing follow-up support, counseling, body work. They formed little small groups of support for each other, these continued acts of healing, because healing can never be a one-time event. Once we've gotten honest and been heard, then we still need the ongoing support to keep processing and to keep moving through. A half a dozen times that summer, we sat, he weeping, hauling out stones, gathering limbs, I near. The stones got smaller, his sentences longer, until one day he says, I feel cleaned out. I love the ending of this poem when he slaps the palm of the one who heard him and laughs, like, because it shows him after everything, literally touching the reality around him, as if announcing with his body, I'm here, I'm alive now. It's the last piece I want to lift up in this path of recovery. After being honest and being heard, recovery requires that we be here. And by this, I mean be present to the experience that we're having here now. Wake up to the new thing that's happening now. What new love is available? What beauty? What new success awaits? Because sometimes, without even realizing it, we can get caught and attach ourselves to the pain of the past that isn't about here and now, but becomes instead kind of like an identity that we don't even realize that we've held on to. I've been realizing this in my own life lately, the ways that I have held on to painful experiences from my past, not because I love the feelings, but because these feelings keep me connected, like to the person who I knew before, the person before they hurt me, to life before. And these feelings become all I have that connects me to that time. But holding on to the feelings then in turn means they have nothing to do with who I am here now, what my life and my friendships and connections are here. And so I've come to believe it can be a choice, that we can make a choice to set these things down. Sometimes when we get stuck, though, when we're struggling to set it down, it can be a sign that we haven't been sufficiently heard or seen for the pain that we experienced, or that we haven't gotten honest enough yet about what we experienced. None of these things are one-time events in the story of recovery. Recovery requires repetition and revision and time. It's not a mathematical formula. There's a lot of mystery and some miracle required. Now, despite my sermon title, I don't really believe that we get over things per se, especially the greatest losses of life. But I do believe that we can get through. I do believe that we can get better. Real recovery takes hard, lifelong work, but when we can be honest and be heard, and when we can be here, we can find a way to the other side. We can make a kind of peace. We can find our way to laughter and to joy once again, so that when healing comes, it can be a kind of rebirth, even a kind of resurrection, a chance to begin again, to feel gloriously and beautifully alive. May it be so. Amen.